Walking out of the steakhouse into the blinding heat, I couldn't believe my luck. Hot damn, I thought. I've got Yardley Masters of Ajax Insurance tied to Andrew McGraw of the Knife Grinders Union, and McGraw knows the gangster Earl Smyson. Vic, you are a genius, I told myself. I got back to the clinic at 2:30. As I walked into the room, the inner door opened and a face looked around. Mean and stupid summed it up. You must be Paul, I said. I'm Vic. He smiled, and the transformation was incredible. I could see the bright intelligence in his eyes, and he looked handsome rather than brutish. I wondered fleetingly if Jill was old enough to fall in love. I followed him to the back, where Jill sat playing with several children. She had the self-important look of someone coping with a major crisis. I grinned to myself. She looked up when I came in, but her smile was for Paul. "Do you think you could leave them for a few minutes?" I asked. "I'd like to ask you a few questions." I took her into Lottie's office. "Looks like you're a natural," I said. "Lottie will probably try to talk you into spending the rest of the summer here." She flushed.
"I'd like to. I wonder if I could."
"No reason not, once we get this other business cleared up. Have you ever met Anita's father?" I pulled out my pictures of McGraw. She studied them.
"I don't think I've ever seen him before."
I hesitated, not sure of the least hurtful way to say what I wanted. "I think Mr. McGraw and Mr. Masters are partners in some scheme. I don't know what, but I believe your father must have been involved. Now I've got to know what it is your father knew about their scheme. Did he and Mr. Masters lock themselves into the study for long talks?"
"Yes, but Daddy did business with lots of people."
"Suppose I asked you to go back to Winnetka to see if he had any papers that mentioned McGraw or Masters. Would that make you feel dishonest and slimy?" She shook her head.
"If it would help, I'll do it."
"How about first thing tomorrow morning? Then we could come back to the clinic in time for the baby rush hour."
"Sure,"
she agreed, and went back to the nursery. At 7, I set off for the weekly meeting of University Women United. About a dozen women were there. I was wearing jeans and a loose shirt, but I was still dressed more elegantly than anyone else in the room. Gail Sugarman recognized me and said,
"Hi, I'm glad you remembered the meeting."
"You're not a reporter, are you?" one woman asked.
"No, I'm not," I said. "I have a B.A. from here." Mary, the woman who'd been with Gail on Friday, said,
"Why don't we introduce ourselves? There are a couple of new people here tonight."
When they got to me, I said, "I'm V.I. Warshawski. Most people call me Vic." One of the women said curiously,
"Do you go by your initials, or is Vic your real name?"
"It's a nickname," I said, "but I usually use my initials. I started my working life as a lawyer, and I found it was harder for male colleagues and opponents to patronize me if they didn't know my first name." Mary said,
"Good point. Now, tonight I'd like to see what we can do to support the equal rights booth at the Illinois State Fair."
Gail volunteered, and a woman called Ruth.
"What about you, Vic?"
Mary asked.
"Thanks, but no," I said. "Why don't you tell us why you're really here?"
Mary said in a steely voice. "Okay, you win," I said. "I came here because I'm trying to find Anita McGraw, and I'm hoping that someone here can tell me where she is."
"In that case, you can get out," Mary said angrily. "We've all had the police on us. Now I guess they thought a woman pig could worm Anita's address out of us where they couldn't."
I didn't move. "I'm not with the police," I said.
"Do you want me to throw her out, Mary?"
one of the other women asked.
"You can try," I said, "but I'm not going to leave until you've listened to what I have to say." "All right," Mary said angrily. "You can have 5 minutes."
"Thank you," I said.
"My tale is short. Anita's boyfriend, as you know, was Peter Thayer. And yesterday morning, Peter Thayer's father was gunned down in front of his home. Now, it's my belief that this same killer shot Peter last Monday.
Why was Peter shot? He knew something that was damaging to a very powerful and corrupt labor leader. I assume something to do with illegal financial transactions. It is further possible that his father was a party to these transactions, as was the man Peter worked for. Now, the probability is that Peter shared with his girlfriend, Anita McGraw, the secret that got him killed, and that when she came home to find his dead body, she panicked and ran. But as long as she is in possession of this secret, the men who have killed twice to protect it won't care about killing her as well.
How do you happen to be involved? Ruth asked.
I'm a private investigator, I told her. My client is Peter's sister, a 14-year-old girl who saw her father murdered and is very frightened. Mary said,
Frankly, I don't believe Anita's life could be in danger. But if anyone disagrees with me and knows where Anita is, go ahead and betray her.
No one said anything. I kind of hoped they would try to throw me out. I felt like breaking someone's arm. Maybe I'd break all their arms just for fun.
Thanks for the time, sisters, I said. If any of you changes her mind, I'm leaving some cards with my phone number by the coffee.
I drove home much too fast. After a while, I realized someone was following me. I braked quickly, and the other car slowed down also. As we moved downtown, I could see it better. A gray sedan, it looked like. Perhaps, whoever they were, they thought I could lead them to the document they had overlooked at Peter Thayer's. The phrase, lead them to, clicked in my brain. Of course. They weren't interested in me, or Jill, or even that claim form. They wanted Anita McGraw, and they thought I could lead them to her. How had they known I was going to the campus tonight? They hadn't. They'd followed me there. I parked opposite the Conrad Hilton Hotel and crossed the street. I stepped inside the hotel doors, glanced outside, and was pleased to see the gray sedan pull up next to my car. I could see a man looking up and down the street. I thought it might be Freddy, one of the goons who'd taken me to Earl Smyson. I slipped out of a back entrance of the hotel and caught a cab back to Lottie's. I had the driver drop me at the corner of her street. Then I went down the alley behind her apartment building, keeping a hand close to my gun. I had to pound on the back door before Lottie heard and came to let me in.
Trouble? She said.
A little. I think someone's hoping I'll lead them to Anita McGraw, and they could snatch Jill and hold her to ransom if they thought I knew where Anita was.
Maybe, after all, it's not so good for the child to be here, said Lottie.
We went into the living room. Jill was curled up on the daybed watching the late movie. Paul was lying on his stomach on the floor, looking up at her every few minutes. I went into the guest room to call Ralph.
It's me, Sherlock Holmes, I said, when he answered. Did you refile that claim draft I found without any trouble?
No, I couldn't find the file. I looked up the guy's account, though. We've been sending him checks for 4 years.
He chuckled.
I was going to inspect Yardley's face today to see if he looked guilty of multiple homicide, but he's taking the week off, apparently cut up about John Thayer's death. How about dinner tomorrow night?
Make it Thursday, I suggested. As soon as I put the phone down, it rang. It was Murray Ryerson. A crime reporter's day is never done.
Just got a squeal that Tony Bronski may have killed John Thayer, he said. And it's dawned on me that Bronski works for Earl Smyson. What's Smyson's angle, Vic? Why would he kill a respectable banker and his son?
Beats the hell out of me, Murray, I said, and hung up. Around midnight, the phone rang again. Lottie answered it, her face troubled. When she had hung up, she gave me a signal to follow her to the kitchen.
A man, she said. He asked if you were here. Then I said yes, he hung up.
The night was muggy. I lay down on the daybed and sweated, dozed, woke, tossed and dozed again. At about 3:30, I heard the phone ring in the next room, and I was somehow not surprised when Lottie came out.
For you,
she said. I picked up the phone.
"This is Ruth Yonkers," a voice said. "I talked to you at the UWU meeting. I phoned Anita afterwards. Anita called me last week and told me about finding Peter. She made me promise not to tell anyone where she was, not even her father or the police."
"I see," I said. "And you thought she'd killed Peter, didn't you?" Ruth gave a little sigh.
"Yes. I hadn't realized Anita might be in danger herself. Anyway, after the meeting tonight, I called her. And we've decided we have to trust you, if there really are people after her."
"Where is she?" I asked gently.
Ruth let herself be persuaded. Anita was in Hartford, northwest of Milwaukee. She was working as a waitress in a cafe. She'd cut her red hair and dyed it black, and she was calling herself Jody Hill. If I left now, I could catch her as the cafe opened for breakfast.
Lottie was sitting in the kitchen. "Lottie, I think this is the beginning of the end."
"Ah, good," she said. "The missing girl?"
"Yes. A friend gave me the address. Meanwhile, the question is, what about Jill? My car is downtown. It's being watched. But maybe Paul can pick it up tomorrow and take Jill home. All I have to do now is get away from here without being seen." Lottie got up.
"Why not wake up Paul? He can take my car and pick you up in the alley. Then you drop him down the street."
"I don't like it," I said. "You'll be without a car, and when Paul comes back on foot, whoever's watching the building will be suspicious."
"Vic, my dear, we won't be without a car. We'll have yours. And Paul needn't come back here. You can drop him off at the clinic. He can finish his sleep there."
Paul accepted the plan enthusiastically.
"When you go to pick up the car, Paul," Lottie said, "check out the front of the building. There's an all-night restaurant off Addison. Give us a call from there."
10 minutes later, Lottie's phone rang. It was Paul, calling from the restaurant.
"All clear," he said. "There is someone out in front, though. I'd better not drive the car down the alley. I'll be at the north end of the street."
I relayed this to Lottie. She nodded.
"Why don't you leave from the basement?"
Lottie pointed a flashlight down the stairs so I could see the way, then turned it off. I peered into the alley. My old friend Freddy sat propped against the wall 2 buildings down. As far as I could tell, he was asleep. I moved quickly down the alley. Halfway down, I broke into a quiet sprint.